You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. That is my goal. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you would like to call in and talk with me today, that number is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is what is eating at you, what is weighing on you. So give me a call and let's talk about that. In the meantime, I have some ideas to talk to you about today about sabotage. Sabotage. I'm going to start talking about the five ways that you are sabotaging your health, your diet, your weight, your wherever you want to go. Five ways you are sabotaging yourself with words. And take a moment and think about the way that you talk to yourself. Do you say mean things that you would never say to a friend, a partner, a spouse, a child, ever, ever, ever? If so, it is affecting how you feel and how you eat. So today I'm going to talk about or start talking about five ways you are sabotaging your diet, all with having to do with the way you speak to yourself. This is so important. So a couple of years ago, I was at a birthday party. Of course, it was a couple of years ago. This is pre-COVID, right? So when it was time for cake, one of the women, I'm going to call her Amy. She said, "Ooh, that cake looks really good, but I shouldn't eat it. I really shouldn't go anywhere near that cake. Summer's almost here. There is no way I am getting into a bikini," she said, "if I still have this disgusting muffin top." And at which point she started poking her stomach. She went on to say, "I need to deal with this or my husband's going to leave me for some tiny, fit little yoga woman." And then she said, she loses weight, she gains it back. She said, "What if nothing ever changes? What if I'm stuck like this the rest of my life?" She sounded very discouraged. And then she said, "Ah, screw it, I might as well have a piece of cake." And she did. Actually, two pieces, not that I was watching her, but she later told me that she went from trying to have the willpower not to have cake to having two giant pieces of cake. At which point she said to me, because people talk to me about this stuff, she said, "I am so disgusted with myself. I had two pieces of that cake. It wasn't even that good. What is my problem? What is wrong with me? Why can't I be normal?" Does any of this sound familiar? So Amy actually sabotaged herself in five different ways. I'm going to break it down. So one way of sabotaging yourself is using the word "should," as when she said, "Oh, I shouldn't eat that cake." I had a college professor who used to say, "Don't should on yourself." I thought it was hysterical. He made it seem like he made it up. Apparently, it's a very well-known old adage. Don't should on yourself. How many times have you told yourself, "I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't eat that. I should be better at this. I should have a better job. I should have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, or I should be married by now. I should have kids. I should. Oh, the shoulds. Even "I should be happier" implies you're not as happy as you could or ought to be. So the word "should" just causes you anxiety, sadness, anger, distress. Those feelings can get so powerful that you are likely to cope by eating. Because when you should on yourself, you feel bad. And then when you feel bad and you don't have another way to feel better, well, you're going to often use the way that works. And that is by eating. Eating for comfort, eating for distraction, eating to numb yourself. whatever the reason. So instead of shooting on yourself, ask yourself, you know what? What do I want? What am I feeling? What's going on with me right now? Be interested in your thoughts, your feelings, your ideas. Be interested in you rather than judgmental. You've heard me say a million times, slight exaggeration, that it's so important to be curious and not critical. And when you are critical, you are mean to yourself, you shit on yourself, you make yourself bad, feel bad, and then you end up eating to feel better. So let's eliminate the should. A person on Instagram is asking if you can, yes, you may ask a question, just leave it in the comments. So a second way of sabotaging yourself is calling yourself actual names and being mean to yourself. So when Amy called herself disgusting, that was mean. That was mean. Can you imagine saying to one of your friends, you really shouldn't be eating that cake because you are disgusting and it is disgusting that you ate it. If you eat that cake, I'm going to be even more disgusted with you. Can you imagine saying that to any other person you know? I am guessing you probably wouldn't say that. Oh, I have a caller, Brian. Welcome, Brian. Brian from Chicago. Are you there? Yes, hello.
Hi, Dr. Nina. Can you hear me? Can you hear me okay?
You sound a little far away, but I can hear you.
Oh, okay, good. Sorry about that. It's the headphones and the speaker and just life in pandemic times, I think.
Hey, it's good to hear from you, Brian. How's life in Chicago?
You know, it's much better now that the vaccine is so widely available and I'm fully vaccinated and my family safe. My young one is fully vaccinated and we're just looking forward to taking those, you know, probably at first tentative steps out back into the world. And hopefully as the vaccine becomes more widespread, you know, the chances of running into people who aren't vaccinated go down and you can kind of get back to something like normal life. I hope your world is equally improving.
We are getting there. Yeah, we're getting there.
Good deal. Well, I heard what you said just before you took this call about, you know, the way that we can be mean to ourselves and the things that we can say to ourselves. And so I think my question kind of dovetails with that. And that is, you know, among the many weird effects of this sort of pandemic world we've had to live in for, you know, well over a year now, is just the constant presence of Zoom. You know, for those of us who work and work remotely, or even just keeping in touch with friends and relatives, you know, before the vaccine started making in-person contact possible again, Zoom was all we had. And so I don't know about you, but I was on Zoom and will probably be on Zoom like this for a while yet, every single day, multiple times a day. And on the one hand, the temptation's always there to just be audio only because, you know, you just woke up, you just don't feel like being on Zoom. But, you know, for work or for seeing your friends, you really want to be able to see each other's faces. But having said that, you have to look at yourself all the time. And so I'm just kind of wondering if that creates issues for people and what you recommend that they do to try to ease that sort of omnipresent, here's my face, especially when you may have issues with your appearance, issues with how you think you look to other people, that sort of being mean to yourself kind of thing because you just don't like looking at yourself. But now it's not just a question of I choose not to look in a mirror. It's I may see myself multiple times a day, every day, and have to feel other people looking at me. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Oh, that is such a great question, because this is something that I hear a lot about people who suddenly are seeing themselves all day. And the Zoom is like looking in a mirror all day. And, you know, yes, you can turn off your video, but then nobody can see you either, in which case, that's going to be a problem. So there's really not a lot that you can do about the actual reality of being on Zoom and seeing yourself, even if it's small you, in a Zoom window. I guess the thing to do is, and this is what I've told people, is to think about what it is you're focusing on. Because if we have the idea of, oh, my nose is too big for my face, just making that up, then that's all you're going to see when you look in the mirror and when you look in the Zoom. But when you look at, well, what do I like about my appearance? Because we all like something. There's always something that we can find that we're going to say, oh, I like my eyes, or I like my hair, or I like my smile, or I like something. The more that you focus on the physical characteristics that you like, the less the ones that you don't like, take precedence. So same thing with looking in a mirror. We find the evidence we look for. When we look for the evidence of what we like, we find it. Mm-hmm. When we look for the evidence of what we don't like, we find that too. And so that would be my recommendation, just first to normalize it. We're just not used to seeing ourselves hour upon hour upon hour. We're just not used to it. And so it can be disconcerting. So first, I just want to normalize that. In fact, I hear this so often. I'm surprised actually that no one has called earlier with this question. Yes. So normalize that you feel that way, and then make a concerted effort to see what you like in your reflection.
Well, I mean, I guess that normalizing it may not be as hard as people might think, because look at what we've normalized for over a year. You know, we've normalized wearing masks every day and, you know, trying to steer clear of people, which is, I don't know about you, but that is so against my nature. I'm a hugger. I'm a in-person people person. It's enjoyable to see people in your physical space and sort of feel a little bit of that connection. So this has all been challenging, but you kind of normalize it in the name of safety and health and just trying to help bring this thing to an end as quickly as possible by doing what we're being asked to do to try to care for ourselves and each other. But, you know, we all sort of normalize some insane circumstances, but you kind of have to, because it's just, you have to wake up and do what you do for your living and eat and sleep and, you know, get some exercise and get out in the air, and that you just kind of have to keep pushing on. So I guess I would say to that answer, to anybody who hears that answer and says, well, that's going to be really challenging, look at what you just did. This is not going to be as challenging as you think, because what you just were able to get through, acknowledging all the stress and anxiety that we all have felt over the past long period of time, if we can kind of find our way through that, we can find our way through anything.
Exactly. I just want to share one thing that Carly Gash has written on Instagram. She said, as a quick fix, we can put a sticker on our face, or like a post-it, or any other little window, and we can do it from time to time when we just want to focus on the meeting. Yes, that is a great interim fix, Carly Gash, and that's a good thing to do, but you're really putting a Band-Aid or a sticker on the issue, which is that you don't like something that you see. And so, yes, that is definitely something that you can do and do that, but look at this as also an opportunity to get in touch with maybe a critical part of you. If there's a part of you that's critical of your appearance, that needs to be challenged. And so,
I saw a really kind of positive and uplifting post, I think, on Instagram the other day, because obviously people, now that we're starting to come out of this, talk a lot about the COVID-19, not the disease, but the weight that people have put on. That, yeah, everybody's kind of calling it the COVID-19. I think it's sort of a play on the freshman 15 that they always say you put on when you go to college. And I saw one person post a picture of themselves, and they said, you know what, I may have put on the COVID-19, and my first instinct is to feel bad about myself, but that I just want to say I'm looking at my body in the mirror right now, and I'm saying this body just got me through a pandemic. And so I'm just going to go ahead and reclaim what my body looks like from a proud place. And I thought that that was a super, super positive way to look at it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you for a great question. It's so interesting because I've had so many people tell me that, and it didn't occur to me to even bring it up on the show. So thank you, Brian. I appreciate
it. Absolutely. Always good to talk to you, and I'm sure we'll be talking again soon. But in the meantime, I hope you and your family keep well and keep up with these shows. They are amazing, and they're just what we need in these times.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Call back soon.
I sure will. Thanks, Dr. Nina.
Okay. Bye. Bye for now.
Bye.
Yeah, that was a great call. Someone on Instagram is asking about not being satisfied. You're not satisfied with your wife. You're very disappointed. That sounds like more of a conversation than a question. But I would say, look at why you are disappointed. What is it that's disappointing you? And see if there's something in the relationship that can be resolved. Josh is saying, how can we get out of our head? How can we get out of our heads? Well, I guess my answer to that is you've got to get more into your head. By out of your head, meaning, are you overthinking things? Are you stressing yourself out? You know, what's going on, and what do you mean by being in your head? And to be very curious about that. What are these thoughts? Where did you learn to think these thoughts? How can you be reassuring to yourself? How can you encourage yourself rather than, don't think that? What's making you think that, whatever that is? And my turning point was, I no longer think that loving myself is vain or narcissistic. Absolutely. Loving yourself is the basis of all your relationships in the world. I used to say that I was a proponent of self-acceptance, not loving yourself. But I've actually shifted to believe in loving yourself as very important. Acceptance is still, of course, important, but it encompasses the things you love about yourself and the things you don't love about yourself. But it's important to be loving and nurturing and caring to yourself, because that sets the stage for all relationships. Your relationship with food is directly connected with your relationship with yourself. If you are being mean to yourself, as I'm just about to, if you're shooting on yourself or being mean to yourself or cutting yourself down in some way, you're going to use food possibly just to get away from your own mean voice. If you're mean to yourself and you're hostile to yourself and you're judgmental, you are going to accept that treatment from other people more readily and more easily because it's so familiar. But when you're kind and loving to yourself, you're not going to let people walk all over you. You're not going to let people say mean things. You're not going to let people be cruel to you. When you are your own best friend, you don't let anyone else treat you badly, not even yourself. So calling yourself names and being mean to yourself. I am guessing that you wouldn't say to yourself, to others, what you say to yourself. You wouldn't be as mean to others as you are to yourself. And maybe you find it easy to say, oh, you're so disgusting, or I'm so disgusting, or, you know, some variation thereof. Words are powerful. Words are powerful. When you say you're disgusting to yourself, what do you feel? You feel good? I don't think so. When you say, what's wrong with me, as Amy did, what's my problem, what's that like? Is it a nice feeling? Not so much. All warm, cozy, and relaxed. No, 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 it's not. It's a terrible feeling. It's awful. It makes you feel bad. And when you feel bad, food reliably makes you feel better. It gives you distraction. It gives you comfort. It's your friend as well as your enemy. And then you can get stuck in a pattern of being mean to yourself, feeling bad, eating, which leads to being even more mean to yourself. How could I have eaten that? And the cycle continues. So how do you stop the cycle? By learning to soothe yourself with words instead of food. By learning to speak kindly to yourself and be a friend to yourself and instead of being so nasty. Nasty does not help, does not help. And by the way, it is not just words that are important. Words are very crucial, but tone also has a lot to do with it. So a third way of sabotaging yourself is the tone you use to yourself and about yourself. I remember asking members of my support group some time ago, I asked them to say something nice about themselves, one at a time. It was very challenging to them. They had to say something nice about themselves. They could say something nice to each other all day, day in, day out. Oh, you're so amazing. You're so beautiful. You're so kind. You're so smart. You're so this. Oh, they could say it and say it and say it. But when I asked them, say something nice about you, this is what I heard. One person said, I'm fine the way I am. This is a hard time, but I know things are going to get better. So that wasn't even about herself. It's okay to feel upset. I'm sort of trying to bring it to life to you. So there's nothing wrong with what they were saying, but there was a lot to be desired in terms of how they were saying it. It wasn't comforting. It wasn't soothing. It wasn't helpful. This is what soothing sounds like. I am fine the way I am. This is a painful time, but things will get better. It is okay to feel upset. Notice the difference. Same word, different tone. See the difference? And when you say to yourself, I'm fine the way I am, said it like a question. How do you feel? Not so great. But when it's, I am fine the way I am, I'm good. I feel good about myself the way I am. Then you probably feel pretty good about yourself and not bad. And therefore you do not need to use food to cope, because the way that you are supporting yourself is encouraging and kind and helpful. And when you talk to yourself the way you talk to your friends and your family and anyone that you like or love, you're going to feel a lot better. And when you feel better, you are not going to use food for comfort. So just an aside, think about the way that you talk to yourself. If it is judgmental, critical, unkind in any way, think about how that might be familiar. Now, many of you have heard Carly Gash is called very often, and she'll start to talk to herself in a way that is, first of all, it's second person. She goes into second person. Carly Gash, I know you're here on Instagram, so you know what I'm talking about. She'll talk about herself in second person in a very mean tone. And it usually begins, she'll be like, oh, I'm so happy. And I was so happy about this person. And I love this person. And then I thought to myself, I'm not where I want to be. See? And then she goes into this horrible, like the devil voice, like, see, you're not where you're supposed to be. And then her tone changes, her voice changes, her words change. And how is she talking to herself? She is talking to herself the way her aunts, who had a significant influence on her growing up, the way her aunts talked to her, and probably an uncle and a mother too. So really understand how you came to have this combative, mean, cruel relationship with yourself. Did someone speak to you in that way and you've absorbed that way of being, and now you talk to yourself the way you were spoken to before? The other way that people learn to talk to themselves in a mean way is when nobody's really talking to them, when they're left too much to their own devices, too much alone. When kids don't have structure, they create their own structure. They create their own mean voice. And that's where that harshness can come from. So take a moment also to consider, where did the stance that you're taking with yourself, if it is mean, where did it come from? Where did you learn to relate to yourself that way? Because it came from somewhere. We are not born being self-critical. We are not born shooting on ourselves and being nasty to ourselves, being mean in a mean voice. We learn it. And that's the good news, because what we learn, we can unlearn, and we can learn a new way, which is what we're doing today, is learning, you know, what are the ways that you are talking to yourself that cause problems and issues and make you feel bad, in which case you're going to reach for the chips or the ice cream or the whatever, or the rosé, whatever it is. Where did you learn to relate to yourself that way? Let's challenge that. So another way of sabotaging yourself is the what if thinking. So remember how Amy said, what if nothing ever changes? What if I'm stuck like this the rest of my life? And notice that is when she went for the cake. That's when she went for the two pieces of cake that she was trying not to have. Before I go into what if versus what is, I want to say this. Anticipation of deprivation, or the experience of deprivation, just makes you want the thing more. If you're telling yourself you can't eat cake, guess what? You're going to want that cake. If you go, I can't have that cake, I can't have it, you're going to want that cake even more. And then when you let yourself have it, you might have those two pieces like she had or more, because then you're thinking, okay, I'm going to have it now, and then I'm never going to have it again until I have gotten my willpower together and stay to my diet and lose X amount of weight. Anticipation or the experience of deprivation makes you want something more. When you say, I can have that cake if I want it, then you can have it. You can say, is this good? Because remember, she said, It wasn't even that good of a cake, but she had it because she couldn't have it. When you tell yourself you can have it, you can decide, A, if you want it, and B, how much of it you want. Gives you power. So what if? What if nothing ever changes? What if I'm like this the rest of my life? What if? What if? What if? What if is about fear, and it is about the future, worrying that some kind of punishment, rejection, or deprivation lies ahead. What if I go out with that guy or that woman and he or she turns out to be such a jerk? What if I get my heart broken again? What if I trust and it all goes to hell? What if I ask someone out on a date and get rejected? What if I ask for a raise and my boss gets mad or says no? What if I make a mistake, get fired? What if I'm making the wrong decisions in my life? What if people won't like me if I share who I really am? What if I say the wrong thing? I mean, these what ifs are so pervasive. What if thinking gets you upset in the present, and it gets you to feel terrible in the present and anxious in the present about something that may never take place? So when you have here and now emotions about future events, you're more likely to freak yourself out because you're anxious and eat for comfort to eliminate the anxiety, even to calm yourself down. Sometimes eating has a sedative effect. We eat, especially something very carb heavy, and it's just kind of that anxiety goes, I'm so full. So in contrast, what is about reality. And when you are grounded in what is actually happening, when you know what it is that is actually true and real, you're not going to feel so anxious. You're not going to feel worried. You're not going to feel upset. And by the way, you've got to know that if you get upset in the future, which you will, something is going to upset you in the future. I'm sorry to say it. Something is going to upset you. But you know what? You have the tools to deal with that. You will deal with that when it happens. You can't reassure yourself about something that hasn't happened. You just get into that place of fear and anxiety and it overwhelms you. And then food calms you down, distracts you, sedates you, what have you. Got to trust that you also will be able to cope with whatever happens. Carly Gash is calling. Okay. Carly Gash, I await your call. So what if is fear? What are you worried about that has to do with an imagined future? What is reality? What do you know to be true right now? And is Carly Gash on? Carly Gash?
Hello.
Hi there. Hi, Carly Gash.
Hi, Dr. Nina, and hi, listeners. I hope you hear me well.
I hear you. We hear you.
Thank you. So with continuing working on your program and with what you teach, a couple of days ago, I experienced this. So I actually was full and I overate extra during lunch. And I actually felt bad, like physically, because that food was too much. Plus, it was very kind of spicy food with garlic, which was causing huge discomfort in my stomach. But of course, I'm always anxious. I have a bunch of feelings. I have a lot of emotional life going on, which I'm still learning to express in a healthy way, in a more effective way. And it's like, you know, it's like opening the water power and the cup is barely holding it, but I'm holding it. So this kind of state, which I'm experiencing every day. So I was still uncomfortable and the best would be for me not to eat till the morning until everything digests and I feel better with drink water. But I was so anxious. So I was thinking, oh, I'm going to drive to this shop, like grocery store, and I'm going to get these two pastries. And I don't eat gluten. Gluten is bad for me. But those are like gluten stuff. And I'm like, and I was driving there and I was feeling like a slave, you know, a slave who has no choice, that I am doomed with the brain I have. And I was driving there and I was already expecting this bad, dark future when I get those pastries, when I eat them at night, at the evening. And on top of that, feeling bad, I will feel worse. Then I will have remorse. Then I will beat myself up for eating that. Then I will beat myself up for lacking willpower and say things like, you just mentioned earlier, see? Working on the show for a while and still eating. But surprisingly,
your voice is getting kind of muddy, but I want to say your voice is getting a little hard to hear, but I want to say a couple things. You were feeling emotionally uncomfortable and you went to eat something, pastries, you're gluten intolerant, that would make you feel in pain or even more physically uncomfortable. So my guess is that you turn to pastries to create the physical experience of emotional discomfort. So you're feeling uncomfortable emotionally, and then you went to eat something that would translate that into physical uncomfortableness. If you're a slave, it's a slave to coping in this way, but you learn to cope in this way. So how do you deal with someone else who's uncomfortable, someone who feels uncomfortable? You don't say, hey, think of something that makes you feel physically sick. Let's go get that and eat it. Oh, you have gluten intolerance? Let's eat some gluten. No, I don't think you would say that. You would talk to that person. Where are you showing up for yourself? How are you showing up for yourself? You're silent.
Thank you, Dr. Nina. So I was driving and I said, okay, I feel like I'm going to go and do it anyway. So I will just go and do it. I will just go and buy the pastries. And then I said, what if instead beating myself up all the way while I'm driving there, I'll just go into the store and buy them without guilt? At least without beating myself up, I'm going to do it anyway. So I went there and I was like, do I need them? I was like, not really. But I said, but I'm going to buy them because I just want to experience buying stuff without beating myself up. Because I usually, when I buy whatever is high carb, you know, whatever, which is not good for health, I feel guilty even buying it. I said, I'm going to buy it first time with good mood, without like beating myself up, no guilt, no blame, no judging, just buy it. I'm going to buy goddamn pastries. They're just pastries. So I bought them, then I took something else, then I came home and I was so, you know, tired and I was like doing stuff and I had a lot to do that day. But I was talking to myself and I kind of was registering what's going on with my body. I'm like, yeah, my stomach hurts. I'm kind of tired and overwhelmed because we need to do this and this. I need to wash my car and like, I don't have to wash it right now if I'm tired. And I surprisingly was talking to myself in a very, very calm way, calm and kind and like, you know, easy, very light, easy. I don't even remember if anyone talked to me like that. And then I said, okay, I'll put this pastries in the fridge. It's not that I don't want them, but I don't want to push, like force myself eating them either. So it was not like before, like, oh my God, I will not them because I will not eat them because I want to be kind to myself and blah, blah. I was like, no, if I want to eat them, I will eat them. And I've been doing it almost the whole year since pandemic started, just overeating every day and sweets and pastries. I've been doing it so many times. I can do it no problem. But then I said, like, I also have an option. I can choose. And moreover, I don't feel like eating them. Why would I, like, force-feed myself? Because they force-fed me when I was a kid. So when I didn't eat it, I ended up eating them the next morning when I was talking to my family and getting anxious anyways. But, you know, at okay. least I had one but evening of progress.
That is a progress, right? Because what happened was the intention that you the intention and the attention that you gave yourself as you were going to buy them, you were thinking, you weren't on autopilot. Josh is saying that people couldn't really hear everything you were saying. So let me just summarize that when she went to get the pastries, she was thinking, I can eat them or not eat them, and ended up putting them in away. She ate them the next day when she was talking to her family. I think we can understand what that was about, but that the difference was that there was a real consciousness of what she was doing and talking to herself in a different way, not on autopilot. So that is really great, Carly Gash, and that is huge. And remember, the process of change is not like we flip a switch and everything just changes. I wish that the Oprah aha moment, really led to change overnight, but it doesn't. It leads to, oh, I know why I'm doing what I'm doing, and now I've got to work to change it in a different way. So that is definitely a win, Carly Gash, that you were able to relate differently to yourself, and rather than just go on autopilot, get the pastries and eat them, you were able to make the choice to decide to eat them later.
Thank you, Dr. Nina. And I want to say to all the listeners that it was one episode. Majority of time, I'm like in this state I described before, like ongoing anxiety with like emotions piled
Carly
up.
Carly Gash, I got to stop you. You're hard to understand. Your words are kind of getting... they're not distinct. So it's okay. Hard to hear you. It's hard to hear you, but if you want to write it in the Instagram comments, I will read it.
Okay.
Okay.
It's okay, Dr. Nina. Thank you. I'm very grateful, and I wish you have a wonderful day, and to all the listeners, I'm sending lots of love and hugs.
Okay, I think she's sending love and hugs. Yeah, sorry, Carly, gosh, your connection was a little iffy today. But I'm so glad that you called, and I'm so glad that you found that time to just change a little bit of the autopilot that you were on. And remember, the process of change is this. First, it's, oh my gosh, I have no willpower. I have no control. I suck. What's wrong with me? Which is also what Amy had said to me. What's wrong with me? I have no willpower. I have no control. Then it's, oh wait, I see that there's some intention. I'm trying to cope. I'm trying to help myself in this way that also hurts me by eating. And you don't figure it out until later. And then you look back and go, oh, I see. That's why I wanted to eat. I get it. And then it's in the moment you kind of realize, oh, I know why I'm doing this. And then after that is, oh, I know why I want to eat, but I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. And then the next stage is, I know why I want to eat. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do something different, which is what Carly Gash actually did. She said, I know why I want these pastries, but I'm not going to eat them. And then the next stage after that eventually is, I don't even think about using food for comfort, numbing, or distraction because I know how to relate and respond to myself when I'm upset. So food is not even a thought, except if I'm asking myself, am I hungry? What's for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks? And is it good? Right. So that's the process of change. And we kind of can sometimes go back and forth in that process, but don't expect yourself to all of a sudden just change your thinking. It's a process to create that change. So the next way of sabotaging is what I call the N word, normal. The definition of normal means conforming to a standard of what is usual, typical, or expected. And to be honest, I have never met any so-called normal person because there is such a wide range of what is typical. And it also depends on where you live and the culture of your family, your neighborhood, your environment, all of that. So if you've got full sleeve tattoos, for example, you are not going to be normal in certain suburban neighborhoods, but you might live in a downtown loft where everyone has tattoos and it's weird not to have any ink. So what's normal? So when you say I'm not normal or that's not normal, you're totally putting yourself down. You're saying there's something wrong with you. And when Amy said, why can't I be normal? Why can't I be normal? What was she saying? Well, on the surface, she was wondering why she couldn't be like people who don't worry about cake. But I think on another level, what she really wanted to know was, why does cake have such a hold on me? Why am I so focused on cake? And there are a lot of possible answers to those questions. Maybe Amy feels deprived. Maybe she needs more sweetness in her life. Maybe she is empty and needs fulfillment, and cake symbolically did that. Maybe it's easier to focus on problems with cake than on problems in her marriage. After all, she was afraid that her husband was going to leave her for some tiny little yoga mom person. So the point is, there was a reason that she was focused on cake, and she needs to understand that better instead of beating herself up for thinking about cake. When you ask yourself questions, you are more likely to come up with answers. That is why it is so important to stay curious, not critical. You got to be compassionate with yourself. You got to be compassionate and not cruel. When you do so, you will understand yourself better. You will feel good. You will be able to respond to yourself instead of react with food. And when that happens, cake is just cake. And you can decide whether you want it or not. And if you want it and you have a bite of it and it's like, meh, you can stop eating it because it's not the last cake you're ever going to have. And when you nourish and nurture yourself with words, you stop using food as a substitute. That is how you outsmart emotional eating. Really is so much about the way that we respond to ourselves. That's everything. It's not even about food at all. Food is the solution to the problem. And the problem is our toxic relationship with ourselves. But when we lift ourselves up instead of tearing ourselves down, we feel better. When we feel better, then we can say, what's for lunch? Instead of, I feel bad. How do I express that in some way with food? And not that you're consciously thinking of it. You're consciously thinking, I shouldn't have cake. I want that cake. But there's something else underneath. Josh is saying it's as if we can fall in love with ourselves. What a beautiful way to put it. Exactly. We have to fall out of hate with ourselves. Because when you're hating and hateful to yourself, you feel bad. When you feel bad, you're going to try to make yourself feel good. And that goes with what's in the kitchen. And that's from birth, our first experience of feeling safe and connected and blissful, really, is the experience of being fed. So we have to get out of this hateful attitude. And as Josh says, I think so articulately, fall in love with ourselves. Because when you do that, everything changes. When you do that, if you feel bad, you respond to yourself with words. You take care of yourself. You view your body as your body, not this thing that you have to attack and whip into shape and discipline. Your body is yourself. If you didn't have your body, where would you live? It's a great little Instagram meme that I happen to love, right? Falling in love with yourself means being as nurturing and caring and considerate with yourself as you are with anybody else, and not being a taskmaster, a slave driver, not beating yourself up, but lifting yourself up. That makes all the difference in the world. So I think that is a good place to end. We're just a little like 30 seconds early ending the show. So I want to thank you for joining me here today on the Dr. Nina Show. I am here every Wednesday live at 11 a.m. Pacific on LA Talk Radio and LA Talk Radio on Facebook and on Instagram, or you can listen later on Apple Podcasts or anywhere where you get podcasts. By the way, if you love the show and if you love the podcast, please take a moment to write a review or at least leave a rating, because it would mean so much to me. The more ratings I get, the more reviews I get, the more it shows up in searches, and the more that I can reach and help people, really, the more that we can reach and help people. Because those of you who call in, you're not just calling in for you, you're actually also helping everybody else who's out there who can completely relate to what you're talking about. So thank you again, everyone. Stay well, be safe, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.